to The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Into our third and final hour on your Wednesday Big Show. Happy to have you along for the ride. We're inside the iconic Electric and Controls downtown and home studio today. If you missed any moment of the show, our hourly podcasts are posted moments after they are completed, and you can catch those podcasts wherever you get your podcasts: Google, Amazon, Spotify, or Apple Pods. Subscribe now and never miss a moment. And we will kick off hour three. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. We'll kick off hour three down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The man who's all over everything in Nashville. He is the host of Robbie and Rexroad on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Friend of the program, it's Robbie Stanley. Robbie, been a long time. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man. Happy to have you on board for a conversation today, and certainly lots to chew on in your neck of the woods. And we've got to begin with, I'm sure, what everybody in Nashville is talking about right now. No disrespect to the Preds, but the Titans looking to get over the hump and win an AFC title for the first time in a long time. And, you know, it's been a fun season. 12-5, the number one seed. They had a bye in the opening round of the weekend, or of the playoffs, sorry. I guess going into the year, Robbie, what were the expectations for this team, and did we expect them to be the number one seed with 12 wins in the bank?
Well, going into the year, the expectations were really high. I mean, they had A.J. Brown back. They had Derrick Henry, who, as we know, is an absolute freak of nature human being. And then you brought in Julio Jones in the offseason as well. So the offense was expected to be among the best offenses in the NFL. And that really didn't happen. Now, a lot of that had to do with injury. Obviously, you lose Derrick Henry in the halfway point of the season. That's a pretty big loss. And the Titans were able to overcome that and win games without him anyway. But it came really on the defensive side of the ball where, I mean, they had just an awesome defensive performance against the Kansas City Chiefs earlier this year. They shut down L.A. on Sunday Night Football. And the defense was, quite frankly, atrocious last season. So there was nowhere to go but up defensively, but I don't think anybody expected this defense to be this good. So now, for really the first time all season, heading into this matchup against Cincinnati on Saturday, the Titans are actually healthy. I mean, Derrick Henry's back on the practice field. It looks like he's going to give it a go on Saturday. Julio Jones is back out there and is healthy. This is the healthiest they've been since before the start of the season. So because of that, because they were able to get the number one seed, even with using an NFL record 91 players on their roster this year, there's a lot of optimism here in Nashville that this Titans team could have what it takes to make a special run here.
And we always talk about identity and obviously consistency in the NFL. You mentioned some of the injuries, and many wondered if that was going to be it for their season, specifically when Derrick Henry went down, but that wasn't the case, and they just continued to roll on and stayed true to their identity and using a bit of a committee in the backfield. But Robbie, what's the feeling in Nashville on Mike Vrabel and kind of what this team has done in his 4 years as head coach?
Well, the feeling for this year specifically is Mike Vrabel deserves to be NFL Coach of the Year. I brought up the 91 players, which is an NFL record that the Titans used this year. To be able to navigate through all the different injuries they had and still end up with the number one seed, I mean, you mentioned it, losing Derrick Henry, that's a big deal. And the Titans were able to navigate through that and end up as the number one seed anyway. So I think there's a lot of feeling around here in Nashville that Mike Vrabel deserves to win Coach of the Year. You take a look at the big picture when he was hired here. The Titans fired Mike Mularkey after the franchise had won their first playoff game in more than a decade. And they fired him. They brought in Mike Vrabel because they thought that Vrabel could have a higher ceiling with this team. And the first year he was here, you know, Marcus Mariota was the quarterback. They missed the playoffs. And the second year here, he got off to a 2-4 start and then made the quarterback switch from Mariota to Tannehill. And really, ever since Ryan Tannehill has taken over as the starting quarterback, this team has been pretty darn good. I mean, they got to the AFC title game in his first year. They won the division last season for the first time since 2008. And now this year, back-to-back division titles, number one seed in the AFC. So Vrabel, especially since Ryan Tannehill has come in and has taken over as the starting quarterback, it's been largely pretty good. And Titans fans, I think, extremely happy with Mike Vrabel. I would not be surprised if Mike Vrabel got signed to a contract extension this offseason.
You mentioned his kind of right-hand man, certainly on the field, as you're right. The success came when they made the switch to Ryan Tannehill. I know you had this theme on your show today, so a perfect opportunity to ask you about this. What is the feeling on Ryan Tannehill? And I think for everybody, it's, okay, Derrick Henry is great, and it looks like he's going to be back on the weekend for this game against the Cincinnati Bengals. But, you know, ultimately, to win a championship and to get to where you want to go, you've got to have strong quarterback play. Certainly need to make two or three dynamite throws in a playoff game to win in the NFL. What is the confidence level in Ryan Tannehill in Nashville, Tennessee?
You know, I think he's got a lot to prove. And it's funny to say that because if you go by purely the numbers, since he's taken over as a starting quarterback, especially the last 2 years, some of his numbers are right up there with, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and some of the elite quarterbacks in the league in terms of, you know, fourth quarter comebacks, red zone touchdown passes, touchdown passes in the red zone in terms of the percentage. They're the number one in the NFL in terms of red zone offense. So there's a lot of things that he's done really well. You take a look at some of the playoff performances. Last year against Baltimore when the Titans lost in the wild card round, he just wasn't very good in that game. A couple years ago in the AFC title game against Kansas City, he got thoroughly outplayed by Patrick Mahomes in that game. So, I mean, you take a look at the quarterbacks that are left in the playoffs. I think most people would have Ryan Tannehill at either number 7 or number 8 of the 8 quarterbacks that are left. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I also think if Ryan Tannehill plays at the top level that we've seen him play here in the playoffs, it's good enough for the Titans to win and continue to advance. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Tannehill. I think it's going to require him to play his best football if the Titans have a chance to advance to the Super Bowl for the first time since 2000. But this is a big, big moment, big, big postseason for Ryan Tannehill. And I would say the Titans fan base, by and large, is confident in him, but, you know, you have another stinker in the playoffs like he did last year against Baltimore. That confidence can change in a hurry.
No doubt about it. He's Robbie Stanley, host of Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game in Nashville. He's our guest talking all things Titans here in Calgary on The Big Show. Logan?
Robbie, first of all, good to talk to you, man. Second of all, Derrick Henry on his road to recovery and could be available for them this weekend. How important is he to this offense? And if he's not at 100%, how much does it change the game plan for the Titans in this one?
Well, he's extremely important. And, you know, it's a running back. And I understand in today's NFL, the running back position has largely been devalued. I feel like it's a little bit different with him. I mean, he's a freak of nature, like I said earlier. And, you know, I'm not going to compare him to, you know, the Rodgers of the world and the Mahomes and the Bradys who, you know, can just completely change a franchise when they come in there and take over. But as far as running backs go, Derrick Henry's about as close as it gets to some of those guys. So, you know, he's been practicing for the last couple of weeks. He got in full pads yesterday. I'm really interested to see what kind of a workload he can handle heading into this game against Cincinnati. He's not played since October 31st. You know, he played that game, largely the whole game, on a broken foot and ran for 68 yards against the Colts in that game. So he looks like he's healthy. He looks like he's back to 100%. That's going to be the plan for the Titans, I think, is to give him the ball early and often and test out the way he feels. If he's not 100% and they've kind of got to back down from him as the game goes on, Deontay Foreman has ran the ball pretty well for this Titans team. He's not Derrick Henry. Nobody is, but he's run the ball well. This Titans offensive line, they can create some holes in the run blocking game, and they've been able to do that. I mean, the Titans, even without Derrick Henry, they ran for 200 yards against Pittsburgh. They ran for 270 against New England. They just fumbled the ball a couple of times. So they've been able to run the ball pretty well without Derrick Henry. He's just a different dude when he's got the ball in his hands, and he's got the ability to break off the big one at any moment. We'll see if he can get back up to that level coming up on Saturday.
Man, it's got to be, as you can say, it's got to be something in the water there in Nashville, Robbie, because Titan fans have been spoiled with running backs. Eddie George, Chris Johnson, Derrick Henry. You mentioned Deontay Foreman, who isn't Derrick Henry, but came in and ran the ball just well. It's something in the water over there in Nashville when it comes to running backs.
Yeah, pretty good stable of running backs here. I mean, I think they put this up on the NFL Network earlier last summer after Derrick Henry ran for 2,000 yards. And you just think about, like, the Titans Oilers franchise in general. You got Eddie George and Chris Johnson. Oh, by the way, some guy named Earl Campbell that used to play as well, and then now Derrick Henry. So pretty good legacy of running backs with this franchise.
Talk to me about the other side of the ball, the defense for this Titans team. We've seen the Bengals show a pretty explosive offensive passing game with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. Who are the Titans going to lean on to slow that down on the weekend?
Well, it's going to be a really interesting matchup because Christian Fulton has been the best corner for the Titans all season long, and he went to high school with Ja'Marr Chase, played against him there. They went to LSU together, so they've seen a lot of each other. I would expect when they do single up Ja'Marr Chase, and I don't know how often they're going to go straight up one-on-one with him, but when they do, it's probably going to be Christian Fulton that gets that responsibility coming up on Saturday. Really, I think what the game is going to come down to is, can the Titans pass rush get after Joe Burrow? Because you've got Jeffrey Simmons, you've got Harold Landry, Bud Dupree's come on as the year's gone along, and also Denico Autry as well. That front four for the Titans has been very disruptive all season long, and the Bengals have given up 51 sacks in the season. That's more than anybody else in the league. So the game plan for the Titans is get after Joe Burrow early and often. If they can do that and they can affect him, I think their defense has a chance to play really well in this game. If you give Joe Burrow time, eventually Ja'Marr Chase is going to get open and he's going to make you play. So I think a lot of this game is going to come down to, can Bud Dupree and Harold Landry and that front four for the Titans generate pressure on Joe Burrow? If they can, I think they got a pretty good chance to win this game.
I was going to say, talk to me about Bud Dupree. I was curious where he's fit in this team coming over from the Pittsburgh Steelers as a free agent and filling into that really prime pass rushing spot for the Titans. What's he been like in year one, and what are they expecting from him to be a big difference maker on the game against the Bengals?
Well, it's funny because if you look at the numbers for Bud Dupree this year, they're not going to blow you away by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, he came off a torn ACL, and I think it took him a while to get over that this year. He's dealt with an abdominal injury as well this year. So it's been kind of an injury-riddled season for him to try to get back and get healthy. I think he's finally there. I think he's finally gotten healthier on that side of the ball. He only had 3 sacks this year. But his impact, I think, has gone beyond the numbers. When he's been in the game, this defense has been really good for the most part. And he finally looks like he's healthy towards the end of the season, started to play a lot better for the Titans defense, got a big sack in the game against Pittsburgh, big sack in the game on Thursday night against San Francisco as well. So I think he's starting to finally come into his own. The ACL injury looks to be completely healed at this point. And, you know, he's getting paid more than $16 million per year. You're going to need to have more than 3 sacks out of that as he continues to go forward here. But, you know, you really get paid for this time of year when you're a pass rusher. If Bud Dupree can come in and make a big impact on Saturday and lead this team to an AFC title game, I think John Robinson and the Titans are going to feel pretty good about that.
Robbie Stanley is our guest. Just a few more with him as the Titans take on the Bengals to kick off divisional weekend in the NFL on Saturday afternoon in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, we talk a lot about teams that are getting healthy and getting bodies back that maybe they didn't have a ton in the season. The Tennessee Titans kind of right there with Green Bay with some of the key names that could come back. Derrick Henry is one of them. And a guy that you mentioned a couple of times already in this conversation is Julio Jones. It's been a very disappointing year in Tennessee for Julio. Obviously a player who's dealt with his fair share of injuries here in the last couple of years of his career. But, you know, really going into the season, you mentioned the hype around the offense. And I mean, Robbie, you could probably count on one hand how many games or how many plays he and AJ Brown have been out there together for. How much of a difference maker and what are the expectations for Julio Jones this weekend against Cincinnati?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what he can do. He just had a pretty good game against Houston where I think he had 5 catches for 58 yards and a touchdown. By the way, that was his first touchdown that he scored all year. Came in the last week of the regular season against the Texans. So it's been extremely disappointing. I think it's been very underwhelming with Julio Jones. Now, a lot of that has been due to hamstring injuries that have just crept along all year long. That's what he dealt with last year in Atlanta, which ultimately led to them trading him. And he has just really not been able to get over the hamstring injury for the most part this year. It seems like he has at this point, and he is healthy heading into this game. So I'm interested to see what kind of a difference maker he can be. Honestly, I think the days of him being Julio Jones in Atlanta and being one of the top receivers in the league, I think those days are probably long gone at this point. I'd be surprised if he really even approaches looking like that guy again. But if he looks like the guy that he looked like in Houston, where he's kind of a possession receiver, he got open down the field a couple of times and Ryan Tannehill missed him on a couple of deep shots. If you can stretch the field with Julio Jones, I think you'll take that at this point if you're the Titans and let A.J. Brown continue to ascend to, you know, one of the top 10, 15 wide receivers in the league, like it looks like he's on track to being. So I still think there's plenty of potential with this offense, with Derrick Henry coming back, with A.J. Brown looking more like A.J. Brown as he's gotten healthier this year. If Julio Jones could give you anything at this point, I think the Titans would take it. But that just kind of goes along to illustrate the type of disappointing season that it's been for number two here in Nashville. Really, the hype this offseason came from bringing Julio Jones in, and that three-headed monster that we thought we'd see with Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, and Derrick Henry. Julio Jones has largely been a no-show this year, and that'd be nice to see him be able to produce come playoff time, but I don't have any high expectations for him at this point.
And then, you know, final one of the Titans as they go into the weekend is the, you know, number one seed in the AFC. We've talked about how good they have been all year and really didn't shy away from their identity. Even when Derrick Henry went down, they still ran the ball down your throat and used kind of a bit of a committee back there led by Deontay Foreman. And now as we go into the divisional weekend, they had the bye. They get the first time slot on Saturday. It just, you know, the Titan fans feel like they're being disrespected here. Do they like not being talked about? It feels like going into this weekend, Robbie, there's not a lot of conversation about the AFC's number one seed.
Yeah, there's really not from a national standpoint. And Titans fans definitely are taking notice of that. There's a whole lot of people calling the, you know, the Kansas City Buffalo game the de facto AFC title game this week. And look, I understand it. Kansas City's been in the Super Bowl the last 2 years. Buffalo just absolutely destroyed the Patriots. So I get why people are saying that, but the Titans have beaten both of those teams this year and beat Kansas City pretty convincingly at home at Nissan Stadium. So Titans fans are kind of relishing that, saying, you know what, that's fine. Don't talk about us. We'll see you in the AFC title game when we punch our ticket to the Super Bowl. And that's kind of the mindset the Titans fans are taking here. But look, you know, Josh Allen is a better quarterback than Ryan Tannehill is. Patrick Mahomes is a better quarterback than Ryan Tannehill is. And a lot of times this time of year, that's what it comes down to, is quarterback play. So that goes back to kind of the pressure conversation on Ryan Tannehill. I think a lot of what the Titans are going to be able to accomplish this postseason comes down to him, and this is a big moment for him in his career to prove that he can handle being in the same conversation with some of those guys.
Before we let you go, just a couple of quick ones on the Preds, and we've got to start. I saw your tweet about the man being an international treasure. Many in this city will agree with you. You know, just your takeaways from, I'm not sure how much around the rink you are these days with certainly restrictions and COVID and, you know, press conferences aren't the same and all of that, but, you know, the Preds fans and maybe the feeling just from you on David Riddick and what he's been able to do and form a goaltending tandem with UC Saros is a lot of Flame fans still have a soft spot for David Riddick.
Well, I can certainly understand why. I've had the pleasure of being around David Riddick a couple of times now, and let me tell you, just what a joy to talk to he is. There's the video the Predators put out last night of, you know, kind of his experiences going into Bridgestone Arena as a member of the Flames and being the opposing goaltender and how much he was looking forward to getting the start at home. He got his first start at Bridgestone Arena as a member of the Predators last night. You know, it didn't go well for the Predators. They lost the game 3-1, and they're in kind of a mini slump right now. They've lost four games in a row. But I think David Riddick, for the most part, when he's been in there this year, he's been pretty good. You know, UC Saros, with his age and how well he's played this year, he has gotten a lot of starts, and he's handled a lot of minutes so far for the Predators. So I don't think David Riddick has played as much this year as he probably would have liked to at this point. But I think for the most part, when he's been in there, he's played pretty well, and the Predators feel great about their goaltending situation. With Saros being the starter, Riddick the backup, they had to take a look at Connor Ingram earlier this year as well when Riddick was on the COVID list, and he's played well. So I think the Predators feel really good about their goaltending situation and certainly can see why David Riddick is a fan favorite in Calgary. He is a pretty awesome dude.
And, I mean, you know, you talk about Nashville's season as a whole. I think for a lot of people, certainly for us here, you know, it's been a higher than expectations type season. They have exceeded expectations to this point. They, you know, I saw them as a playoff bubble team, maybe at best. And, you know, the one outlier there has kind of happened. A, Saros, as you mentioned, has been lights out. But B, Robbie, it's been a big bounce back offensive season from the likes of Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I'm right there with you guys. I had the Predators finishing in seventh place in the Central Division in the preseason. I think it's pretty obvious at this point that I'm going to be wrong on that. But, you know, Predators fans really had given up on Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene in terms of them being productive and living up to their contracts. They were both exposed in the expansion draft of Seattle. Predators fans were begging for Seattle to take one of those two guys. And it's just so interesting to see the turnaround with those two this year. They've both been really spectacular from the start this year. Johansson, I think, has played really well. He's been really physical this year. And Duchene just looks like a totally different player this year than he's looked like in the previous 2 years with the Predators. So their turnaround has largely led to the success that we've seen. Roman Josi continues to play at a Norris Trophy caliber level. I don't know that he's going to be, you know, a finalist or win it this year, but he's playing, he's at over a point per game right now as a defenseman, which is just absurd. So there's a lot that's gone well for the Predators so far this year, but I think you nailed it. Johansson and Duchene have been really driving the bus for this team this year. And if those two guys are going to play like that, this team has a chance to be pretty good.
And final one for you, I think going into the year, because people had the Preds where we just talked about kind of out of the playoffs and not really being much of a factor. It was a guy you saw pretty much on every trade board. But what's the conversation in Nashville? And I guess your thoughts on Philip Forsberg is, you know, he would have been a guy that probably got the Preds a ton in a trade at the deadline. But it reminds us a lot of the Matthias Ekholm situation where he felt like he was going to get traded. He ultimately gets extended. What's the feeling in and around your part of the world on Philip Forsberg and kind of the Pred situation there? Does it feel like they're going to walk him to free agency here, Robbie?
Well, it kind of does, and it's really been one of those things where there's been a lot of nervous energy, I think, for Predators fans around him because, you know, as you guys know, the Predators' ability to draft and develop defensemen over the course of their franchise is pretty darn good. They've had some good defensemen walk in and out of there. It's been much harder to find forwards that are as good as Philip Forsberg. So, you know, there's this fear out there that you might lose him for nothing. You know, I think heading into the season, you know, my kind of approach was if you're David Poile, you either get him extended and sign him to a contract extension or you trade him. There's no way you can risk losing him for nothing. But with the Predators playing as well as they play to this point and then being right in the thick of things in terms of the Central Division and the playoff race in the Western Conference, I'd be surprised at this point if David Poile decides to trade him. So, you know, I know that the two sides have been talking. I talked to Philip Forsberg earlier this year, and he said, you know, if it has to go down to free agency, that's something that he can do. He can play out his contract, and that's something he'd be willing to do. I do think he likes it in Nashville. I do think in a perfect world, Philip Forsberg would like to sign a contract extension with the Predators. But, as you know, got to agree on money. There is a business side to this deal, and I'm interested to see how that works out. Certainly, when he's been on the ice this year, I mean, he's got 19 goals in 28 games. So he's been pretty darn dynamic for them so far this year. The problem with Forsberg and what makes him tough to figure out over his career is he has had a bit of an injury problem. He just got off the COVID list as well, which I know is a bit of a different situation this year. But when he's been available, he has been awesome for the Predators, and I think could be making himself a lot of money. So really interested to see how that plays out with Philip Forsberg.
Robbie, great stuff as always, man. Enjoyed the conversation. We'll do it again soon, and have a fabulous rest of your day and enjoy the game on Saturday. I guess we didn't talk about it, but it's quite the doubleheader on Saturday, Titans and Preds.
Yeah, a little double dip here in the Nashville area. Looking forward to it. Appreciate you guys for having me.
No problem. Here he is, Robbie Stanley, our guest on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. He, of course, the host of Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game in Nashville. And he, as I mentioned, joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Logan, it'd be pretty cool to be in that city on Saturday as you've got the Titans and the Bengals with a 3:30 Nashville kickoff, 2:30 here, 3:30 in Nashville. And then 4 hours later, just across the river and in downtown Nashville, you've got the Preds with a 7:30 contest on Saturday. So, I think there's probably some people that would be doing a double dip, but obviously the focus, and you can understand why, is on the Titans in the AFC divisional contest.
Have you ever been to Nashville?
No. I had a trip planned, and then the pandemic hit, and I didn't get to go.
Wonderful.
So, I had flights booked for the end of September in 2020, and as we know, in March 2020, life changed forever. I was going to go to a Titans game. I was going to do some fun things, but never got the opportunity to go. And you can bet it's going to be on the short list to get back to at some point here as things return to a somewhat normal. What about you?
No, I haven't either. And the reason I brought it up was because it's become sort of a bucket list item for sports fans to go to Nashville, because I think there were already great things about the city beforehand, but now the sports scene's really taken off. I remember they had the draft there, the NFL draft a couple of years ago, and you know, people raved about the experience, and now the Titans have been good for a couple of years. The Preds are entertaining. Like, it's become more than just like a country music party destination. It's a sports destination too. And what a weekend it's going to be there for the Titans and the divisional round, and the Preds, like they said, you and Robbie mentioned, in a bit of a slump, but still miles ahead of where a lot of people had them. Yeah. It's turned into quite the sports town. And I feel for you. That would have been a trip that, would have been high on my list too. It's right up there for places I want to go visit and catch some sports games too. So hopefully you can get that one rescheduled, like we mentioned, when it gets a little bit easier to travel here. But you can see why it's become the place it is now.
Yeah, maybe I'll go for Saturday. A little double dip.
There you go.
Preds.
Yeah.
Flames and Oilers can wait. I'll just
Watch it on NHL Live later.
That's right. That's right. On the replay or record it and watch it when you get home. Either way, Saturday is going to be awesome in Nashville. Looking forward to that game with the Bengals and the Titans. They kick off the four-game NFL weekend, two on Saturday, two on Sunday. It'll be the Green Bay Packers and 49ers on Saturday evening. And Tampa and the LA Rams kick off the Sunday slate at 1 o'clock. And then after that, the final game of the weekend, you've got what should be a dandy, a rematch of last year's AFC title game. It's the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. He is Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. We'll have more on the NFL weekend as our week continues. We'll try to focus in on a couple more teams from divisional weekend. And when we come back, though, we're going to close out the show with a 3 o'clock staple. Of course, our show has been moved an hour earlier than it usually is, and that's because the Calgary Hitmen are in action in Moose Jaw tonight at 6. But when we come back, I'm going to close out the show in style. Logan Gordon taking us through the busy day in sports and the biggest stories, headlines, in about 5 minutes on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Closing out the show in hour number 3. With another edition of the Sportsnet 960 Big Show Headlines. They're brought to you, as always, by Hyatt Infinity. Finance or lease a 2021 QX50 and get a no-charge prepaid maintenance from Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road, on Luxury Lane. Logan, what is making news on a busy Wednesday across the sporting world?
Well, we'll start with the NHL announcing extensive updates to their regular season schedule, specifically around the Calgary Flames. 10 games, including 8 home games, have been rescheduled for the Calgary Flames after the NHL completed their comprehensive update, which will enable all 32 teams to complete their respective 82-game slates by the regular season's closing date of Friday, April 29th. The Flames will have 8 home games rescheduled to February, 1 home game rescheduled in March, and 2 road games rescheduled in April for a total of 10 rescheduled games. Full list, you can head to CalgaryFlames.com or you can head to Twitter, Sportsnet960. Pat and everybody's got the latest for you right up there. The NHL in total completing a 95-game rescheduling between February 7th and 22nd, which had previously been, will the Olympic break. So that's a huge, huge undertaking by the league. The updated schedule includes 98 new games postponed over the two-month period from November 18th to January 18th and date changes to 23 other games to accommodate new dates for postponed games. This was a massive undertaking by the league. We've been waiting for this news for a long time, Will, and now not only do the Flames, but the rest of the NHL now knows what their schedule will look like for the rest of the year. When we talk about the Calgary Flames specifically, get ready for a lot of home games in February and March going forward with this revised schedule.
Yeah, 10 games, obviously, the Flames had lost to this point, and all 10 now have new dates attached to them, and 7 new back-to-backs for the Calgary Flames. So they go from having four games in February to now having 11. And there's a lot of home dates on there. And I think that's the biggest plus for a team like Calgary is, yeah, they're going to have a jammed schedule, but they're not going to have a ton of travel. They go to Columbus and St. Louis next week. And that game in Columbus, their final one this season in the Eastern time zone. So, yeah, they've got some trips to Nashville and Chicago that are going to be made up at the end of the season in the middle of April. But, you know, this is a team that's going to spend a lot of time at home. They're going to play a lot of games, but they're not going to have to do so by getting on a plane after the game and getting to a new city and getting in there at 4 or 4:30 in the morning. And I think a lot of that is going to play a very important role as the Flames look to get back into a spot they were early in the season, and that's protecting a playoff spot and not chasing down a playoff spot. So that's the one positive, I think, here for Calgary is every team's going to be dealing with it, some obviously more than others, as some teams have had more postponements and cancellations. But, yeah, I think the Flames are in a good spot because they don't have a ton of travel attached, and it's not like they're making up trips to Toronto or Ottawa or Tampa or Florida or Carolina. You know, these are, you know, we're talking about, yeah, plane rides, but we're not talking about 5-hour plane rides. And I think that's a really huge plus for a team like Calgary.
As for the NHL schedule tonight, three games that haven't been rescheduled or postponed. We'll start with the one across the Sportsnet television network, the first of a back-to-back games tonight. Will Austin Matthews can tie the NHL record for a road goal-scoring streak when the Leafs play the Rangers in MSG. The center has scored in 10 straight games away from home, one away from the record set by Steve Yzerman of the Red Wings in 1989. Matthews has 12 goals over that streak, 8 at even strength, and he scored 25 on the season. That's good for third in the NHL. He led the league, of course, in scoring last year with 41 goals in 52 games. His head coach, Sheldon Keefe, said there's really nothing that continues to surprise him about Austin Matthews. The young man is impressive.
We all know he has the ability to score every night, really has the ability to score every shift if the right opportunity comes around. And you don't know when that's going to be, but when the other team makes a mistake or when he gets a puck in a good spot, he has the ability to capitalize on it. So I don't think there's anything more to it than that. It just speaks to his level of consistency as a player, you know, to put himself in those spots so that he can score.
Toronto coming into this one 24-9-3, Will. Rangers 25-10-4. Should be a good one. 5:30 from MSG.
Yeah, certainly when you look at the schedule tonight in the NHL, I know the late game, and you can watch it on Sportsnet, will be the Avalanche and the Ducks. But, you know, in terms of Wednesday night hockey on Sportsnet, this first half of the doubleheader, that's a pretty marquee matchup, and not one we likely see in the playoffs unless it's a conference final. But the way these two teams have played this season, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one tonight in New York, and can't wait to see what Austin Matthews can do because, I mean, again, kind of like we talked about earlier in the show with Alexander Ovechkin, do I think Matthews goes down as one of the best goal scorers of all time? Yeah, he might actually challenge that because that's all he's done since coming into the league. Six consecutive 25-plus goal campaigns. Likely was robbed of a 50-goal season because of the COVID shutdown in 2019-2020. So I think it's only a matter of time before he gets to 50 here in his career. Might be as early as this season. But, yeah, kind of that next generation of goal scorer after Ovechkin's done. He'll still be scoring lots of goals in the league. Looking forward to this one tonight. It would certainly be the number one in terms of if I was to rank the matchups this evening. Number one for sure would be the Rangers and Maple Leafs. Looking forward to this one at 5:30 on Sportsnet.
Other games, two more to get to. Well, we won't spend a ton of time on this one, but we'll mention it, Will. The Coyotes trying to win consecutive games for the first time since November 20th and 21st when they visit the New Jersey Devils. It's been a bad year for the Coyotes. They're tied with the Dallas Stars and Seattle Kraken for the fewest road wins in the NHL, just one behind the Montreal Canadiens. The Devils, however, beginning a four-game homestand after their previous two games were postponed. Coyotes forward Clayton Keller has 8 goals in his past 10 games. Devils 14-18-5 lost two in a row and are 5-12-1 in their past 18. Two struggling rebuilding teams in this one, Will.
Yeah, Arizona at minus 58 in the goal differential. New Jersey at minus 22. So my quick math tells me that's a combined minus 80 in the goal differential in this matchup tonight. So there could be some goals scored in this game. And yeah, there's no doubt it would be number three on the power rankings of tonight's matchups. New Jersey had a good start to the year, but they've really come back down to earth. They've dealt with some injuries, which I know every team has, certainly some COVID pauses and absences as well. But yeah, it was a nice start for New Jersey. Certainly has come crashing back down to earth here in the last 20 or so games.
And the last one on the schedule, you can catch this one on Sportsnet 360. The red-hot Colorado Avalanche have won three in a row, including a 4-3 shootout against the Minnesota Wild on Monday. They've won 14 straight at home. They're 8-0-1 in January, are 13-1-1 in their past 15, being led by Nathan MacKinnon, who scored his 600th NHL point on Monday, and defenseman Cale Makar, who's on a six-game point streak of his own. Avalanche begin a back-to-back on the road tonight against the Anaheim Ducks at 8 p.m. They'll play the LA Kings tomorrow night. Ducks have cooled off considerably well. They've lost three in a row and are 2-6-2 in their past 10 games.
Yeah, I mean, not great for the Anaheim Ducks, as it felt like they were a team that, you know, was going to be in the playoff conversation. They've certainly come back down to maybe where expectations were. You know, they've lost three in a row in regulation. And not a team you want to face when you're trying to find your game is the Avalanche. You just seem to not only win games, but put the puck in the net at a crazy rate. The Avalanche right now are second in the NHL, third in the NHL, sorry, when it comes to goal differential. This is not a matchup you want to have when you're trying to find your game. And the one thing I will say about Anaheim, I know it's not been a good 10-game stretch here. I mentioned the three consecutive in regulation, but overall, they've got the seven overtime losses or shootout losses on the season. And those 7 points, Logan, have really kept them in the conversation. And that's the one thing I'll give them credit for, is because even when they might not have their best game, sometimes this year they've found a way to pick up points. And they've put themselves in a spot where at least they're not going to be chasing here. And we'll see if they can hang on to a playoff spot. But I think the one thing that's saving them right now is their ability to still find a way to get a point when they might not have their best effort.
Moving on to football, we talked about this a little bit earlier on in the program with Danny Austin of Post Media, but the Calgary Stampeders continue to lock up key pieces ahead of CFL free agency in February, this time re-signing national offensive lineman Sean McEwen to a two-year contract. The local product was a CFL All-Star center in 2021 and was, of course, an eligible free agent next month. Quote from from President and GM John Huffnagel, said, quote, "Sean provided strength, stability, and leadership during his first season as a Stampeder, and he performed at an all-star caliber level. I'm very pleased he made the commitment to the team, and his presence goes a long way towards solidifying our offensive line," end quote. The O-line changed up a bunch during the year, Will, but McEwen was a fixture at center. He started all 14 regular season games. He makes the calls on the line. He's a former UFC standout and served as one of the team's captains this season. He's excited to be back with the Stampeders. He was a key piece on their offensive line, and he's back for two more seasons with the red and white.
Yeah, and I think it's a massive signing because, obviously, you know, the left tackle gets a lot of attention, and rightly so, with protecting the quarterback's blind side. But the center is the guy who keeps it all together, keeps them as a cohesive unit. He's the one who is more often than not making the calls at the line of scrimmage about who the mic is and, you know, certain pass protection schemes. So, yeah, Sean McEwen was a fixture on this team offensive line last year as a CFL All-Star, made his impact felt. And as a Calgary native and a former Calgary Dino, it's cool to see him re-up with the Stampeders for two more seasons. So if you're a Calgary Stampeder fan, I know it's not the sexy one with the offensive lineman re-signing for his next 2 years, but this is a big signing for Calgary, and John Huffnagel and company continue to, you know, make a serious dent. If they were to start the offseason with a list of players they wanted to get under contract, I'd say to this point they are well over half of terms of guys they absolutely wanted to have back in the 2022 season. And you can guarantee Sean McEwen was on that list. This is a big signing and a good signing for the Calgary Stampeders.
In the NFL, ahead of the divisional round of playoffs, this one a bit of an interesting situation. The NFL fined Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians $50,000 for striking his own player over the helmet during Sunday's game against the Eagles. That coming from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. But we've heard reports today that he is going to appeal that suspension. It's a weird piece of video on a special teams play, Will, where he looks like he's trying to get the attention of one of his players to get him out of a scrum and just sort of smacks him on the helmet, but gets a $50,000 fine for doing that. Also, at a Kansas City, ahead of their matchup against the Bills, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a full participant at practice, so maybe they get their starting running back against the Bills. And some offseason news, the Eagles have committed to quarterback Jalen Hurts as their starting QB in 2022. Their year-end press conference with head coach Nick Sirianni and GM Howie Roseman. Roseman committed to doing whatever they can to help him grow as their quarterback.
Yes, I think for us, we got to do whatever we can to continue to help him develop. And how do we do that? By surrounding him with really good players. Players continue to grow. That's a huge part of developing. They grow. How they are in their second year is not how they're going to be in year 4, 5, 6, and 7. And they're also products of the people around them. So that's on us to continue to build this team.
The 23-year-old threw for 3,144 yards to go with 16 touchdowns, 9 interceptions out of 784 rushing yards and 10 touchdowns on the ground. Will, I would imagine the Eagles, equipped with 3 first-round picks in the upcoming draft, will allow them to build around Hurts going forward.
Yeah, I mean, obviously none of those are super, super high picks, but anytime you've got that much ammunition going into a draft, you can use it to your advantage. Maybe they pair a couple of those and make a big trade if there's not somebody they absolutely love at that point in the first round. But, you know, for me, I understand why they've committed again to Jalen Hurts, but, you know, last time I checked, you've got to be a pretty good thrower of the football as a quarterback, especially in the NFL, and I'm not a huge believer in Jalen Hurts myself, and we'll see if he ends up proving me wrong. But, you know, a great athlete, a great runner, and we saw that this year. But, I mean, when he's relied upon to make the big throws or lead his team solely to victory, we just haven't been able to see that. And I think you look at last weekend against Tampa, obviously they were outmatched, but, you know, this is a sport where, you know, you have to be able to adjust. And I get their game plan 99.9% of the time is to run the football and run it hard. But when you're down 10 points or 14 points in a game, is he a guy that you're relying on or at least confident in that he can get you back to a good spot and, you know, all of a sudden lead the team through the air? I just don't have that confidence in him. So I get why they did it. And we're also talking about a draft that doesn't necessarily have the generational or even, you know, strong quarterback talent. There's not a good feeling about potential quarterbacks in this draft. So I can get why they've committed to him for next season. But if there's an opportunity to upgrade and you know, this team can make a trade, I don't know why they wouldn't do that. But, you know, again, that's me in Calgary saying that. We'll see what they ultimately end up doing. But, you know, this is, I think, at the end of the day, the only choice they had. And maybe he does get better in year two, but I kind of see him as a poor man's Lamar Jackson, and I just don't know if I'm, you know, all that giddy or pumped about it if I'm an Eagles fan to hear that today.
Last one on headlines, sticking in Philly, since we're switching to basketball, where the saga between the Philadelphia 76ers and Ben Simmons continues. Reports from The Athletic, Sam Amick saying that the point guard will continue to sit out for the remainder of the season if he's not traded by the NBA's trade deadline. The Sixers have been actively seeking a deal for the disgruntled star since he refused to report at the start of training camp. Will, the trade deadline in the NBA is set for February 10th. Philly in the thick of an Eastern Conference playoff race, just 2.5 games back of the first seed. You would think they'd like to bring in some players that could help them in that race, excuse me. But Daryl Morey and company have been pretty clear that they won't just trade Simmons because he's requested a trade. They've been fine with him sitting up until this point, and clear he won't be back with the team if he's not traded past the deadline.
Yeah, and this has been, as you mentioned, one that's gone all the way back to training camp. He hasn't been with the team at all. He's asked for a trade multiple times. I don't know what that market looks like, but you know, as a former first overall pick, it just hasn't really worked out for him. And you know, I don't think Ben Simmons is going to get you an absolute haul if you're Philadelphia, but I can also understand the, you know, the desire to not just give him away. So a tricky situation, and I would expect him to be one of the bigger names to move at the NBA's trade deadline. And I don't know what ultimately his destination ends up being. I know Toronto's been loosely in that conversation. But yeah, I think we're kind of starting to maybe see this thing come to the surface. And I think a lot of 76ers fans and probably even those teammates that haven't seen him all year would like to put an end to this saga. So yeah, it's been a weird one, that's for sure. And you know, I think as the days go by, and we've talked about this maybe in, you know, having a greater impact in sports like football, but you take that much time away from the game and time away from, not to say that he hasn't been training or working on his own, but you know, I do wonder if I'm a team looking to acquire him if he hasn't played all year. Does that scare you a little bit? I would think it does, but I don't know.
There you go, Will, your Wednesday edition of headlines.
There it is, the Wednesday edition of the Big Show Headlines, which is brought to you every single day by our friends at Hyatt Infinity. And, you know, this is probably the time you want to go check out our friends at Hyatt Infinity. Offering winter tire swaps from just $59.95. Book your appointment now at Calgary's original Infinity destination, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane. Three NHL games on the docket tonight. The Flames are not in action until Saturday. But, hey, they've got a lot to chew on after a 5-1 victory over the Florida Panthers. A lot to like in that game last night. The boys will break that down in full to kick off Flames Talk at 3 o'clock. Don't forget that at 6 p.m. tonight with Brad Curl, it is the Calgary Hitmen and the Moose Jaw Warriors. Calgary began their three-game Saskatchewan trip with a 4-3 win in the shootout over Regina yesterday. We'll see what they can do in Game 2 of that three-game trip tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the Big Show. Adnan Virk going to join us. Peter Lombardi is going to join us. Got a fun Thursday lined up, and we're happy to have you with us as we do every single day. Thanks for tuning in. If you missed any of the show, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Pods, Amazon, or Google. Subscribe now and never miss a moment. Pat Steinberg and Matt Rose take you through Flames Talk next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.